is our hope and intention that this recording will become a living memory and permanent record of history in the making during our lifetime and an inspiration to future generations.
All right. And we are back for part two of the Laserbeak interview. If you've heard the first episode, we covered a lot of things, talking about, I went all the way from like marriage counseling to the Plastic Constellations, the bands that and projects that Laserbeak was involved in before, and we covered that in episode 164. So might make more sense to listen to this episode 165 after you've heard 164, because right now we're about to get into how Doomtree was put together and his experience with working with Lizzo and other sorts of fun little tidbits that go in here and there. And Johnny question mark is not a part of this episode, unfortunately, because he was out of town last week. So let's just get right into it. I know you want to hear it. Here's episode 165 featuring Laser
Beat. I rocked it. Rocked it.
So what, when you were growing up, what was it that, what did your parents do? What were their careers? Because your dad was kind of, was he jumping around?
Yeah, he was jumping around. We moved to Hopkins when I was two because he had gotten a job as an assistant pastor. So he was in the church for a few years. Mm-hmm. God, it's hard to remember all the things he ended up doing. But his longest job was, he worked at Pillsbury. Woo-hoo! In like some sort of distribution and computer thing. He'd gone to school for that. Mm-hmm. My mom was a nurse, and so she would work nights. So, but they were always really, they've been super supportive. Mm-hmm. I'm just like truly, it's very, you know, I know a lot of people in the arts who are like, yeah, you know, my parents want me to be a doctor or like, you know, sure, take over the family business or be a carpenter like my old man. And yeah. Even though that wasn't, you know, they were musical. My mom like sang in the church. So like I do remember at a young age, like after dinner, my mom would get on the piano and me and my mom would sing like hymns. Okay. And whatever. Like yeah, that was normal.
Yeah.
And I don't think I appreciated it at the time. Now I'd be like, this is beautiful.
Yeah. Was it just you? Did you have brothers, sisters?
It was me. We adopted my sister Emily when I was five. Okay. From South Korea. Okay. And so it's just the two of us. But we were, you know, big enough age gap where we weren't like super tight until sure later in life. But yeah, that was kind of it. And so they were just kind of like, yeah. I didn't feel like, you know, they wanted me to go to college, but when I did for a year and was like, I went to MCTC, I basically like relearned Spanish and I tested into like pre-algebra. So stupid. Not the greatest at math.
Yeah.
And, you know, after a year, I was like, I just don't, there's nothing here that's, I want to do that will like give me the job that I want. Mm-hmm. So it feels like a waste. And so I just started delivering pizzas and really trying every waking hour to make music and play shows and shit. Yeah. Like that. And it took 10 years of that. Like I definitely delivered pizzas for 10 years and I'm not above it. Like yeah. I always know I could go back to someone's got to deliver your pizza, man.
Any crazy stories delivering pizzas that you recall?
God, I wish, dude. I mean, that was certainly like my thought. It was like, yeah, this is gonna be wild. Yeah. I'm going to be partying and yeah, fucking, you know, you never know when they open the door.
Hand me a beer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, it was pretty fucking tame. Or at least I didn't pick up on any invitations if that was the case.
Okay.
No wild shit.
Okay.
So boring. I should have like a fake story to tell, but nope. But it was like the easiest job to go on tour with because you could work a bunch of shifts. You could pick up people's shifts.
Right.
Then as long as you got your shifts covered, you could be gone for 3 weeks and then lose all your money on tour and then come back, pick up all those shifts for another week and still pay your rent.
Right.
It was genius.
Were you still living at the place in, was it Uptown?
I was in Uptown, yeah. And then I was in, yeah, I was always kind of around there. I was like, I kept moving east. It's kind of like the Minneapolis pilgrimage, I feel like. You start in Uptown, you slowly move east. So then I was like kind of by 3rd and 26th by MCAD, and then I was like basically 40th in Chicago, mm-hmm, then 40th in Cedar, and now I'm like basically on the river. Like I might as well be in St. Paul. I just keep skirting
sure
east.
What, so who There's a Doomtree house.
There was the Doomtree house.
There
was two Doomtree houses.
Oh, there's two.
There was
okay.
one and there was two. One okay. was on like, I just drove by it the other day, 32nd and Garfield.
Okay.
And then the second one when everyone got, I don't know if we got kicked out or what. I never lived at either of these. I want to be very clear.
Okay.
I had the invitation. I was like, I don't want to do that.
No, were they party houses too?
I was like, I love to hang out at these houses, sure. but I do not want to have a room upstairs at one of them.
Okay.
But yeah, the second one was like right behind the Green Mill where I worked on like 27th and Girard or Fremont, like okay. uptown. Yeah, most everybody lived there.
Okay.
That was our 20s.
Sure, sure. So who owned the houses?
They were renting them. Yeah, they were rentals. Okay. The first one was like it was right next to the Wookiefoot house. So there were these two houses next door.
I know exactly where you're
talking.
Yeah.
And like they had been built by someone clearly who was like a music person because there were studios built into the basements, which mm-hmm. is how these guys moved into it. That's how we met Dessa.
Oh,
she was over at the Wookiefoot house.
Okay. So the house that you're talking about was Crunchy Kids recorded and lived there for a bit.
Very possible, way after that. Yeah.
Okay.
I think it burned down at some point, or one of those houses burned down.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, dude.
John and I did a podcast with Chance.
Oh no, shit!
Crunchy
I
Kids
love Chance.
There at that house.
No shit.
Yeah.
Awesome, Chance York. Shouts to Chance York.
He's got a show. Did you see that? He's got a show on Channel 2 on TPT.
Is he doing
outdoor show?
No shit.
Yeah.
I love it. I love that guy.
I'm working on getting him back on the show.
Dude, he's got such a cool journey.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think I have no idea how it happened. I was always just like popping over.
Yeah.
And then I always lived with my now wife. I was like, I think I'll just live with you. This is way chiller. Like,
and I'm also not going to get in trouble
here.
Exactly.
Exactly. But yeah, dude, that was the journey for mm-hmm. sure. That was the early 20s.
And so was the process you guys would record there?
Yeah.
And then everything was mixed and mastered elsewhere?
I mean, at that time, everything was just done. Like, we'd just gotten a really early version of Pro Tools, and it was like, okay, I think we, like, quote-unquote mixed and mastered it, and now we're going to, like, we knew a guy that could, like, burn it onto, like, 50 CDRs, and then it was like, okay, now we have 50 CDRs, and now we got a show at the Dinky Towner, and, mm-hmm. I mean, the whole reason Doomtree was a crew was because there were, you know, POS had, like, three total songs, and Sea Slaughter had three total songs. No one could do an opening set by themselves.
Sure.
So it's like, well, if POS and Sea Slaughter and Sims all kind of play together, then we have 30 minutes. Everyone does their three songs or whatever, and we fuck around and do a freestyle or something. Like, and so it was like strength in numbers. And then as it crewed up, it was like, well, when you have 10 people on stage and each of those 10 people invited forced like four of their family members to come and buy a ticket, like all of a sudden promoters and bookers are looking at you like, wow, you brought like 70 people out on a Monday night. Like, yeah, we'll have you back. Like, it's all a sham. You just had to like really fucking force your friends to come and pay money to see you.
Is it the band? Is it the dollar PBR? What is it?
Yeah, exactly. It's hard to say. So that was kind of how it all started.
Okay.
For sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
At one point you said there were 10 members. Now it's a solid 7.
Yeah. I mean, it was honestly probably way more than 10. It's hard to remember because my role was very peripheral in the beginning. Mm-hmm. I was literally just like coming around and I was excited to be there and I was just starting to make beats. And my job, you know, we were still pretty fucking organized. We had like weekly meetings and shit. But my job was the archivist, which meant that I literally had to go out. If we were lucky enough to get like a paragraph show write up in like a weekly, like a City Pages, I had to go then like pick up 20 copies of those and just like put them in a drawer and hold on to them.
Okay.
Because God forbid we might be able to like make our 50 page press kit and send it out to like a club in Chicago.
Sure.
Different time.
You got to be ready for that.
Different time.
Yeah.
So that was like my big role. It's like, okay. This is how you start. And then I think the person who was running the cash box ended up leaving. You know, keep in mind, this is like everyone's like 20.
Mm-hmm.
So people come and go. Half of the people in the crew were like made up. Like Emily Bloodmobile is the producer on like a lot of the first POS record. That was just POS and that was his like fake producer name. And we had like a fake picture for her on the website.
Okay.
And,
Emily Bloodmobile.
I love it. And then, the person who was running the cash box left. And I was just always the person that raised their hand was like, well, I could figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of a sudden I'm in charge of the cash box and there's like $40 in there, and I go to Target and I buy one of those ledgers, and it's just like, you know, it's just in and out essentially. It's like expense and income. So it's like, okay, well, we spent $30 at Kinko's to make the flyers.
Yep.
And then we sold, you know, 10 CDRs. So now we made $20 so we can make more flyers and burn more CDRs. And then that slowly has just like, I've always been that person. So at any point, okay, we got to figure out how to, you know, get a show, or we got to figure out how to make t-shirts or whatever the fuck. Like, I just have steady been that. And I slowly grew into my role as like, you know, on paper CEO of Doomtree Records, which sounds a hell of a lot more fancier than it is.
Right.
But it's just like, you just get shit done. I've kind of like, that is my, I guess maybe you put that on my tombstone or something. Like, he got shit done. He figured out a way. It's like, whether it was good or bad or in the middle, like, that's to be
done.
Determined, but I fucking got it done.
Yeah. So you got to drive. That's great.
I do.
You know what? I love this. By the way, I'm loving this.
Awesome. Me too. This is fun.
Because I was that guy for Lunatics Productions, our label too. I was the guy, basically, and I did the web design.
Yeah.
And I didn't do all the flyer design, any financial stuff.
Yep. You just had to do
contacting
it.
Contacting Copycats and Noiseland and working with the everything, man.
Just like the
it's great to hear like that.
Dude,
it wasn't great. That was not great.
I mean, it's like, it's so, like I said, like, you know, seventh grade me thinking like, okay, playing those three notes on my dad's acoustic guitar, being like, I'm going to headline Lollapalooza, and this is what it's going to look like. You know, I'm writing out my set list, what I'm going to play.
Yeah.
Looks way different 10 years after that. It looks fucking insanely different 10 years after that.
Sure.
Like, when I think about what I actually do, and when I now consult or help younger artists or whatever, and like, dude, this is so not what I thought it was going to be. Like, this is so fucking, this is essentially a cubicle job. Like, I'm on the phone and on email. Yep. I have like just answering dumb shit. And, but that's part of it.
It is part of it.
And so it's been a really like, it wasn't the, I think this is everybody's life, right? Like, I saw it going a different way, but I'm in it. Like, if, you know, seventh grade me would be like, that's pretty fucking cool if I end up over there.
Yeah.
Even though the way I had to get there was not super cool,
sure,
or, you know, really laborious and painful. Yeah. Still is.
But now,
but now
you've got credits.
I've got credits.
You got some fucking credits.
I got some credits,
boy.
Baby. I got a discography now.
You do.
Come on,
man.
Well, you do this shit long enough.
You got to be. the thing about, I don't know what it's like in other cities, but I've never been one to be like jealous of other people's success.
Mm-hmm.
Doomtree to me was always like, holy fuck, man, you guys were such an inspiration to me.
That's awesome to hear.
Just to see your success, the way the visual aspects of everything, the videos, the t-shirts, the music, of course, was always an inspiration.
Sweet.
And
feels good.
And now you've got the Hamilton mixtape credit.
Yeah.
Man.
God.
How does that feel?
I mean, it feels weird.
I would imagine.
Guy who's like shit talked musicals my whole life. I'm like, I don't fuck with musicals unless they're like a Muppets movie or whatever. Like,
yeah.
I love Muppets movies, but. So even the whole Hamilton thing, I was like, I still have never actually fully seen it. Dessa had been tight with Lynn for a while before he blew the fuck up. Even he was a fan of hers, which is amazing. Like, he was also just like kind of a spoken word, like hip hop guy that was trying to find his lane. And Hamilton blew the fuck up.
As a person with kids, I knew him as the guy from there was a show on Channel 2, not Alphabet. What was it?
Fuck, I don't even know. I know
it wasn't Sesame Street.
Yeah,
but it was kind of like a kids type show.
Really?
Yeah, and he was on
there.
He was like, he would freestyle and stuff.
Yeah. Oh my god.
It was
kind of
like a hip hop generation.
It wasn't Yo Gabba Gabba.
No, it was not.
Because that was like Biz Markie. My kids love that.
Right. But I wish if John were here. John has seen Hamilton.
Yeah.
He's seen Hamilton, I think, two or three times.
Amazing.
If I'm not mistaken.
Amazing.
I tried. My wife loves it. I tried because I love hip hop.
Yeah.
And musicals to me,
they're tough.
They're tough. Yeah.
Not for me.
Not for me, exactly.
But yeah, man. Like, he was a fan, and so when this mixtape opportunity, you know, obviously the musical goes absolutely hammer. He's like the most famous person in the world for a minute there, and then the opportunity came to do this mixtape of the songs that didn't make the cut, and I think he has big fucking names on that.
Alicia Keys.
Yeah, like,
fuck.
Big dogs.
Nas.
And I think somebody fell off like last minute. Because all I know is I got a call from Dessa and she's like, okay, it's similar fashion a lot of times with Dessa. Like, the call comes in, and I kind of have no idea what she's talking about. Like, okay, but it's got to get done, like, in 2 days. Yeah. And you're like, okay, yeah, sure. Send over some, you know, the demos, and I'll take a listen. And sure. So, yeah, within, like, I think within 2 days, it's, like, me, her, and Andy Thompson, who's the another producer, composer guy that's kind of the three of us that have been making all of her music for a while.
Okay.
You know, we had essentially it's a cover of a song that didn't ever make it into the musical. So we had the just like piano and his voice. We had to figure out how to make that into like a song. And mm-hmm. and the turnaround was fucking insane. It's like, you know, we had this, you only get one shot. Like, and we did it. And it was awesome.
Yeah.
And then it just comes out. You're like, oh, right. Sick.
Yeah.
Like, cool.
That's crazy.
It's cool to see it on the, yeah, it's cool to be on a weird track list like right. that.
Yeah, you're it's on exciting, an album. Man. John Legend is on there. Totally, Common.
Totally.
Usher?
No, yeah, oh we have God, no man. Right. We have no right, but we are. We're on there. We squeezed in. And again, that's like most of my life is just saying yes. And so that was another example. Like, you know, I don't know. You want to? We have 48 hours. You want to do it? Like, yeah.
Right.
Fuck it.
So now, of course, we have to talk
yeah.
about Lizzo.
Oh, yeah.
Holy shit, man.
She's pretty big now, huh?
Yeah, she's a little bit. But the what I was saying before is like you get, you feel like you're a part of something, even though I'm not a part of any of it in any way. But the Lizzo Bangers album was like, holy shit, who is this Lizzo? You know?
Yes.
And then like if my wife likes it,
right.
Then I know something's
working.
Right.
Yeah. Something's working. Same with me. Same with my wife.
So she came up from Texas and just kind of just popped right into the scene.
Dude. So yeah, I think. If I remember it right, she had gone, you know, bounced back and forth between Houston and Detroit with family, and then ended up in Denver somehow, and then made it to Minneapolis.
Okay.
And I had seen her on the video shoot. I had met her on a POS video shoot. It was for Fuck Your Stuff before his album We Don't Even Live Here came out. And, you know, just like there was a ton of rappers there. I knew she had like started popping up on people's little mixtapes. Like Mike McLaughlin had got her on a song on his Snacks mixtape. And so, you know, just like a little quick dap, like any video shoot, like whatever, everyone, you know, we're all playing it cool. And, and at this point I really had only produced for the five MCs in Doomtree or the crew as a band. It's very rare that I would produce outside of Doomtree.
Sure.
And I had just like, I think I had just had my first kid or I was about to. And I was kind of going through, it was my late 20s, and I was going through the whole fucking late 20s, like, wow, what am I going to do? I'm still delivering pizzas, whatever. And it was Twitter, of all fucking garbage
fucking
dumpster
Twitter.
Places. I got to say, at least it did this solid for me. She totally, you know, she's a big manifester, and she did it. She just literally did that thing, you know, she shot her, whatever, like. It was a man, I wish I could afford an at Laserbeak beat on Twitter. And of course I saw it. And I was like, it was just at that moment that I had been like, I think I'm ready to open up and like not stop working with Doomtree, but expand the roster of people I work with.
Yeah.
And I think I just wrote back like, you know, a 6-pack of Mike's Hard Raspberry Lemonade would probably do it. Like, it's like, it doesn't cost that much. I don't know what you heard. Right. And then instantly Ryan Olson, a friend and also an amazing producer who's like, Polisa, Marijuana Death Squads. He's worked with gangs, everybody you can think of, produced for Justin Bon Iver. Even Third Eye Blind. He hopped in and was just like, I'm in, let me help. Like, let me help facilitate. And so.
Did he have. So he's the totally gross national product.
Yeah, exactly. So he also had this label, which is kind of like a.
Okay.
Almost like an. It was similar to Doomtree. We're all friends.
Sure.
Like, they were just like. Those guys were all from Eau Claire originally. But. So you flash forward a week later and Lizzo takes the city bus to Ryan's bedroom studio where me and him are. And she lays down the first songs for Lizzo Bangers. So what had happened was I had put out this beat tape called Lava Bangers.
Yep.
And it was just 20 tracks of beats because I had made so many beats that these were just the ones that like people in Doomtree weren't fucking with. I was like, fuck it, I'll just flex a little bit, throw this thing out there. And she had just come into town and I guess had been, the way she told it at least, had been going through like a creative rut. Hadn't written in a while. And that beat tape got her inspired. So she wrote like 3 or 4 songs just to those beats. And then those were the first songs we laid down. She was just like, I'd been listening to these. I made these songs. And me and Ryan were both like, this is fucking sick, man. And then every week we would do it more and more, and then the record was done. It's fucking amazing, dude. It's like the coolest thing ever.
So are some of the songs on, are some of them the same beats?
Yeah, yeah. There's probably like four or five that actually are the same beats. They just got like tweaked and extended and mixed differently. But yeah, I wouldn't be able to tell you the names, but but yeah. So that like led to, oh wow, you know, maybe like a third of the album is already beats that were on Lava Bangers. Then we started making new shit. Then Sophia Aris came to do the one guest verse, which
Batches
was Lizzo's
and
friend, Batches and Cookies. Yep. And like now I manage Sophia Aris. Like I've been friends with her ever since. And so it was really like this pivotal moment in my life of like opened myself up, said I was going to work with people outside of the crew. Ended up just like this thing happened right after I told myself I would do that. Then all we wanted to do was to make a full length album and put it out. Like we had no money. There was no money. The label, quote unquote, Totally Gross National, you know, there's no money. We recorded it all for free. We mixed it all for free because Ryan Olson, BJ Burton, who's like a super producer now, had just moved into town from North Carolina. He was like living for free in Ryan's like spare bedroom as long as he mixed whatever Totally Gross record was was up next.
Okay.
And it happened to be Lizzo Bangers. Yeah. So like that was how he was paying his rent. Sure. He mixed Lizzo Bangers. Now he literally produces for like Miley Cyrus and Charlie XCX.
Oh, wow.
And fucking like he is the shit. Yeah. But you know, we put that record out. We started the first shows we got. At first it was like, this is a Lizzo and Laserbeak album. Mm-hmm. And I remember being like, it's not, that sounds bad. Like it should just be a Lizzo album. Mm-hmm. And I produced it. That's great. And I'm still on the cover. Like it's me and my old 1999 Toyota Camry in the background or whatever. But it's like, no, this is clearly a moment for Lizzo. Like, this is a Lizzo.
Yeah.
But the first couple shows we got, my name was bigger than hers. So, like, I remember, I think we played, like, a Summit Backyard Bash. And we definitely played sound sets, local stage. Mm-hmm. And both of those in the contracts were like, it has to be billed as Lizzo and Laserbeak. That's the only way you're going to actually get this amount of money versus this little amount of money.
Wow.
And that, you know, keep in mind, this lasted for like 2 months. And
sure.
Then no one gave a shit about me, rightfully so.
Yeah.
But it was just so, it's so wild. Like, she helped me, you know, her and Sophia weighed in on what I should name my twins. Like, we were just kicking it.
Yeah.
So it's a really amazing moment in time in my life.
That's cool.
And I'm really just overjoyed at, it was very clear that it was a straight up trajectory. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad our paths crossed.
So did you see that? Like, from my point of view, when I first heard that album, it was just like, you could tell. There was something about her.
Yes.
That was, even, you watch the videos.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Totally.
Batches and Cookies, you know, you're in there with the
yeah, I got the donut eyes.
The donut eyes, yeah.
Yeah. No, 100%.
Glam Doll donuts.
Yeah, Glam Doll. Shout out Glam Doll.
Yeah,
I mean, instantly. She had, people always talk about like, oh, they've got it or whatever. Like you just can't put the je ne sais quoi. She had it. She has it. She will always have it. Like she's electric, magnetic. And then she's also just like a quadruple threat, right? Like she's a fucking amazing singer, amazing rapper. She's a professional flautist.
Yeah.
She does great interviews. She's funny. She's like outgoing, like on and on and on and on and on. And also, she's a fucking hustler and she's down to work and she knows what she wants and she does. She taught me, I'm Midwest kid. Like to me, before Woo Woo got more acceptable and we all now manifest everything and talk about it and speak our truths, like that manifesting felt like you were jinxing yourself. Like don't say it out loud or it's not gonna, like knock on wood, you know? But she was the first person that taught me like, no, say the fuck out loud, whatever you want. She was like, I wanna play Madison Square Garden. I remember that like, the second time we hung out, and I remember being like,
wow,
this is bold. We're just cutting like the fourth song. Like this feels weird. I don't feel comfortable saying things like this out loud. And then sure enough, like a year later, she opened up. I mean, it wasn't like Lizzo, but she was, she toured with Harmar Superstar and they opened up for the Yeah Yeah Yeahs at Madison Square Garden.
Wow.
And it was like, fuck, man.
So and now
like,
she could easily.
Oh yeah.
Headline
she'll
it.
Be, she it's on her upcoming tour. Okay. She's playing Madison Square Garden.
Okay. Wow.
So just those types of things like that really opened me up to like, yeah, man,
to
you
like,
can.
You know, performing on Letterman.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Which
you did that.
I had to fight my way onto that one because I was already kind of being phased out of the look.
Sure.
You know, by that point, it was like rightfully so. The like tall, balding white guys and like totally on brand for what's happening here.
Yeah.
And very much understood it was my time to be kind of slowly removed from the visuals. Mm-hmm. But I remember that came in and I was like, there's no fucking way I'm not coming with you to play this thing. I paid for my own ticket. I was like, I'm coming. You don't have to pay for shit,
yep.
But I'm coming and I'm playing Letterman. Like, this will be the thing that my relatives actually really appreciate.
Sure.
And I'll be able to talk about forever. I'm talking about it now.
Yep.
And it was like right before Letterman was off the air too. Like, it was towards the end of his run.
Right.
So like, I remember talking, you know, you have to get there at like 6 a.m. and then you just like, it takes forever. You set up, then you do the song like 20 times so that they can map out how they're going to shoot it and what angles.
Sure.
And then you just wait around in like a cockroach infested basement for hours. And like, I just remember chopping it up with the crew who are all union, who are all just like, I don't know what I'm going to do, man. I've been with Dave for like 20 years or whatever.
Wow.
You know?
So they're
like, what are we going to do?
Yeah. So it was that close. They knew the end was coming for the Letterman show.
It was coming. I mean, yeah, he was calling it quits or whatever. So
October 2014. Yeah.
Dude, it was really special. Okay. And also, like, that was a moment too where it just felt like the whole city was rooting for us. You know,
I remember, man.
Remember getting like hit up that night, like, because you know you film it. The show wraps at like 5 p.m. Like all the crew members, like, I gotta go pick up my kids or whatever, and then you never get to see it until it airs like 6 hours later.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, we're all, you know, at some bar in Brooklyn, like, team's all there, like, we're all excited, but we have no fucking idea how it's going to look. And, like, I truly couldn't even remember if I did my parts right. Like, we just did it, and then they were like, yeah, I think we got it. And then they, like, kick you out onto the curb, essentially.
Yeah.
Because the music's the last thing they record. So, yeah, it was just this, like, nervous feeling. I drank so many vodka Red Bulls leading up to this. And in New York, they do not, like, most bars don't have Red Bulls, so you got to order, like, a vodka on the rocks, and you go to the bodega, sneak in a can of Red Bull and pour it into your
face.
So that was my move at the time in New York. They might have Red Bull now. I don't
sure.
know. Just trying to kill the nerves. And then it was like, that went good. And then all of a sudden the phone's blowing up and everyone's like, oh yeah, we watched it all at the CC Club. We put it on all the TVs or whatever. It was like, oh, this is so, like,
that's
I live
awesome.
For that shit.
Yeah.
That is to me like better than any sort of like money or charting or whatever is like, I mean, maybe there's an amount of money that'd be better than that probably.
Right.
But the money that I've seen, it's tough to beat that feeling of like when a whole town is rooting for you.
Yeah.
And it's really,
it's gotta feel good.
It's fleeting. It's always fleeting. Cause you know, you only can get so big before, not that they, sometimes they turn on you, but before they're onto the next one. Like, we love a good hometown story here.
Yep.
But we only love it until, we only really love it when you're just ours. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as you're everybody else's, it's kind of hard to like still feel that onus. So I've had sweet spots in both Plastic Constellations, Doomtree, and with Lizzo, where it was like, oh, it just feels so good to be loved.
Yeah.
You know, it
yeah.
just feels good. So anyways.
Well, if I'm speaking for Minnesota, we do love you.
Oh,
okay?
Thank you.
Trust
thank
me, man. You. And Lizzo, too.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. You do kind of have this hope that they come back here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, the way, the one thing I really loved about Prince was like, he was international, worldwide loved. And granted, he left,
he
but
up,
he always came back here.
And he grew up here. That's the, it's tough with Lizzo because it did feel like she's ours. It feels like she's still ours. And then when you go back in time, you're like, wait, she was really only here for like 2 years. Like, she just popped up. I was lucky enough to make a record with her. Like, I do think that record was pretty pivotal, but clearly she was going to be where she is now regardless.
Sure.
And then she moved to LA, and then it took years before she really blew up grinding it out in LA.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, it's different where someone like Prince or people like an Atmosphere or a lot of Doomtree, even like, we're here. We've always been here. So you stick around. That's awesome. But yeah, she was like, she's kind of passing through.
Yeah.
And we got her for this like really special moment.
Right.
But it's always great. Like, she's doing the XL. I can't wait to go to that show. And Sophia, you know, I'm still very close with Lizzo's team because I manage Sophia, who's Lizzo's DJ. And Lizzo has Sophia as the first of three on the entire Lizzo stadium tour. So Sophia will be, she's billed. She's going to be doing like a DJ and performance set.
Oh, cool.
And then Lotto, and then Lizzo. So, you know, she still puts on for, it's cool to see. She stuck with her ride or dies. Like, Sophia's still in the mix. Her mom, clearly, like, those types of people.
Nice.
She's looked out for.
When does that tour start? Do you know?
I think it starts in, I know rehearsals start. Sophia goes out to LA in August. Starts in mid-September, I think.
Okay.
I think she's coming to XL in October.
I met Sophia at Martyrs one day.
Oh, yeah.
And because I know they were working on a little something.
They're always scheming.
Yeah. I would like to get her on the show.
Mm-hmm.
She'd be a good guest, too.
She's the best. She's going, yeah, she's going to be hard to track down, but if you ever do it remotely, it might be easier.
Okay. Yeah, she seems like, because she's DJing Twins games.
She's everywhere. Yeah, she's everywhere. She's going out to Cannes. She's flying out in like 2 days to this like week-long DJ thing in Cannes, south of France. I think that's how you say it. I know.
Cannes, yeah.
Crazy
Cannes.
Shit.
Cannes.
Yeah. But yeah, shout out to Lizzo. She's going to crush it forever.
Yeah.
I would love, you know, if I'm going to be super real, like it was hard to let go of that and realize like I'm not like attached to this. Mm-hmm. I was attached to this for a moment and she is going to go places that I'm not going to be able to follow her.
Sure.
So yeah, there's a part of me that's like, God, let me produce your next record. Let's do it again. It was so fun. Like, and not just on some like clout chasing shit, like on some, like that was some of the most unique, exciting music that I've ever made.
Sure.
Because it was so different from what I was making. Like it was the first time where I was working with someone that clearly had like a background in the R&B that I grew up listening to. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's from Houston. She talks about seeing Destiny's Child at like a Walmart or whatever. You know, to like be like, oh shit, we're introducing like this kind of 90s R&B into the mix. Uh-huh. And it's like, I'm getting crazier with the production and she's doing things I've never, with other vocalists, I've never seen someone go.
Yeah.
It was just so exciting. It felt like kind of tip of the iceberg, like wow, we could really develop this.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe someday. I got Lava Bangers 2 coming out, you know,
right?
Maybe I'll get her on a beat.
Now does Total Gross National Products still own the rights for that
they
album?
Still have, at least for the time being, you know. Okay. Everything has terms, but yeah. Sure. So I know that I don't think the 10-year anniversary comes up for a year or two, but I think there's plans. You know, that record went away from streaming for a bit there.
Yeah.
But we got it back up there.
Yep.
And we're really, she does really, like, stand behind that record. Obviously, it's not what she sounds like now. But
sure.
So it's cool that, like, it's not, like, going bananas on streams or whatever. Mm-hmm. But people can find it. And it really is right now until this special album comes out. It's like, when you go to her Spotify page, it's like, 'Cause I Love You or whatever that one's called. 'Cause I Love You?
Yeah.
And Lizzo Bangers.
Yeah.
And that's me by the Toyota Camry in the background.
Nice.
Rest in peace.
Is that on vinyl?
It was. I think they're planning on reissuing it.
Okay.
Before they lose the...
I got to get me one.
I know, right? Yeah. I don't even know if I have one. But like, that's how it was. I wrote her bio. Like, it was me and she had a manager, Jeff. And it was like the two of us just like, okay, we need a bio. I guess I'll try to... All right, Lizzo, what was it like growing up? Okay, yeah, we'll put that in there. Like, you know, just like the most DIY shit, just like that's all I've ever known. Yeah. So you just do it, and every once in a blue moon it fucking hits.
Yeah.
And we're always chasing that our whole lives, I think.
Yeah. You rub elbows with some interesting folk.
Yes, I will say.
And you mentioned Harmar Superstar too.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you guys did the Bangarang video.
Yep.
With,
he was in the Bangarang video.
Karaoke, right?
Yep, exactly.
Who came up with the concept for that? That's genius, man.
That was my friend Isaac Gale, who also is the one who came up with Laserbeak with me drunkenly in a car. He's done a lot of the Doomtree videos, and he's done... I mean, he's also an amazing singer. He's in Marijuana Death Squads and just, like, all over the place. But, yeah, he was, like... I think Doomtree... It was right before No Kings came out. We were going to New York to play CMJ, which at the time was kind of like a South by Southwest-style place where, like, you did showcases and performed new music.
CMJ.
It was the College Music Journal. It was the college radio charts forever. It is no longer. But it was, like, a big deal. It took place in New York in the fall every year. And it was, like... at a billion different venues, but very much like a South by Southwest. And so we knew we were all flying in for like 2 days. And Isaac was like, well, fuck, man. And we were like, you know, we have $1,000, dude. I don't know what the fuck we're going to do. And he's like, well, I got a friend who has like a TV and we can just like do a fake karaoke hang. And Harmer's going to be there. So we'll just get our like famous friend to dance around.
Yeah.
And that was that. And we shot it on like, we landed. We made it to Brooklyn. We shot it. We went to bed and then we played the showcase the next day.
He's the guy that's like, I don't know him.
Yeah.
So Sean, right?
Yep.
Sean Tillman.
Yep.
Not afraid to take his shirt off.
Nope.
Me, you wouldn't catch me without my shirt on.
At least there was a time. Yeah, but, totally.
Yeah. And it just seems like he's willing to have a good time no matter what.
Yeah.
You know?
I grew up with him basically. Yeah.
Oh,
he's,
cool.
He's, I mean, he was another one of those people that, I didn't grow up with him, but he was someone that was like older than us that that kind of, even my old band, like he kind of would let us open for him and stuff. He like kind of looked out for us. So yeah, he's just been, he's kind of been someone who's kind of supported and kept an eye out forever.
Very cool. Harmar Superstar has always been like a name.
Yeah.
I don't know. At one point, I actually heard the music before.
Yeah.
But I saw the name. You're just reading City Pages, of course. You know.
Of course.
Yeah, you see the name.
Well, I remember,
all the time.
I mean, his first band was Calvin Crime, and they were like this punk rock awesome
Crime.
Band. Yeah. And I was just like amazed. So yeah, he's done it all, man.
So during the pandemic, first of all, how are you doing?
I'm doing good.
You're doing
what
okay?
time is it? Yeah, I'm doing great. I talked to you all night.
It is 9 o'clock. We can keep going. This is already going to be a two-parter.
I know, right? Let's do a 15-minute timer.
Okay.
Hit me with the hot seat questions so I can get home to put my kids to
all
bed.
All right. Because I do. I've got some questions here.
Yeah,
and some of these are thinkers.
Okay.
If the death clock were a real thing, would you want to know the day or the time of your demise?
No.
You wouldn't.
I don't think I would. I've thought about this a lot. I think I'm good, man. I think that would freak me the fuck out, and I would be counting the days down.
What if you had a choice of knowing the day or the time or how you were going to die?
I don't want to know that.
Neither
shit.
Of those.
No,
neither.
I really don't. I would just. I'm the type of brain that would really like harp on that shit and overanalyze it, and it would ruin my life,
sure.
My actual living life,
yeah.
Until I died.
Understood.
Yeah.
So this is another deep one, because I know you're kind of a spiritual guy, right?
Yeah,
I'm into
crystals.
Crystals,
I'm on a very much a mindfulness journey
okay.
for the last like 6 years of like, it was meditation. It was like really a deep dive of anxiety that kind of rocked me, and I found meditation, and that has kind of opened me up to like mindfulness practices. And yes, so yes, I would say I'm not like full on. I believe in these spirits, but
sure.
I'm definitely more in tune with the mind and body.
Sure. So the question then is, what do you think happens to your spirit when you die?
Dude.
Do you believe in like the theory of a spirit world?
I don't, but I'm kind of like, you just kind of return to the earth, and it's all a big thing. So like it's all energy, and it's all moving around, and like just the way that your body turns into the trees and all that shit. Like, I think the energy of your spirit gets dispersed and keeps the energy of life happening.
I like that.
I don't know. Anytime I really think about it, it's too much. And so I'm just like, I don't know. I should probably just drink a beer and watch sports.
Let's not get too deep.
No, I don't have like a, there's no, I don't see like a pearly gate situation, but I do think it's all connected and it's all important. And like, the way you live your life matters, and like the people that you care for matter, and so we're all kind of part of the same team as we come and go,
right?
And if I turn into a cow or something, that would be the shit. I love cows. So yeah, I'm all for like a
reincarnation.
I'm into that idea. I love that concept.
Yeah.
All I know is there's no hell, man. There's no hell.
Right.
I was definitely taught there was a hell, and I was lived in fear for a long time.
Sure.
And I just try to, as my kids, we haven't like raised my kids super religious at all. We haven't raised them not religious. It's just like we haven't put that on them.
Spiritually.
Yeah.
You've been given them spiritual guidance.
But I have told them, I was like, I don't believe there's a hell. That's one thing I will tell you. I don't believe there's like a fiery hell that you go and burn in for the rest of your life. Because that really fucked me up.
That would make heaven would be earth. Heaven is
earth. Yeah, I think so. Okay. I mean, there might be a heaven too. That would be awesome. I love the idea that there's like a better place we all go to.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't seem super plausible, but whatever. That's the whole idea, right?
So now the next question, in terms of coming from Doomtree, a crew of seven people.
Yeah.
Are you a fan of Wu-Tang?
Yes.
And then, so of Wu-Tang, who is your favorite member of the Wu-Tang Clan?
It's changed over the years, and now it's like, if I had to just be super honest, it's Ghostface.
Okay.
I love Ghostface.
Yeah.
He's such like a crying baby. He's amazing. Like, I'd never heard someone like cry rap before.
Yeah.
And
you're right,
when he goes into that, it was just so incredible. Doomtree got to, we actually played after Wu-Tang Clan at a paid dues festival in California.
Paid dues, right?
Fucking Merce. It was Merce's festival, and I don't know, they had to have just had to leave at a certain time, so they put them on before us.
Yeah.
But I just remember, like, we got to watch from the side stage. Those guys had, like, little juice boxes on stage. So cute. Like, they were all just, like, drinking orange juice and shit during their sets. And then we had to go on after them, and it was, like, the biggest fucking tank job ever. You know, like, the whole crowd has just chanted along to, like, legitimate classics.
Yeah.
And then we had to go on, and, like, it was rough. But, yeah, so I think Ghostface.
Ghostface.
How about you?
I mean,
I love you, God.
So actually, my current one is Inspected Deck.
Yes,
because I don't know if you're familiar. He's got another project called Czarface.
Yes,
yeah, that I love.
Is that good? So I've never listened Czarface. To that, but yeah.
So I'm kind of a comic nerd.
Yeah,
I mean, I haven't been into comics in a while, but
yeah.
But they really play off of, like, they've created
they
this character
there.
Czarface is this comic character, and they've even had, like, Marvel artists.
Oh shit!
Do like the
yeah.
drawings, and they even had a comic book and, like, an audio book on
I love that
CD on
yeah.
vinyl.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Okay,
so Inspector Deck. But I grew up, like, loving Old Dirty Bastard, yeah. you know. But I kind of came to the realization that really he only had really one solid good album, and I come to learn, like, after watching the yeah. biographies and stuff about Wu-Tang, that really. That was just rehat, like the stuff
yeah.
he had done up to that point, and just
totally
kind of, I don't know, lost it after that. Not, I don't know.
Yeah, it wasn't a super fruitful career.
Yeah,
of music.
But
you
know, otherwise, Method Man is
yeah,
just
totally.
Incredible,
insane.
Of course.
Insane. That was always the first one that resonated with me, and then as I got into production, it was like, oh yeah, RZA, because he's
oh
like
God.
The fucking guy.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it is cool. My dad. God bless him. He sends, like, the greatest dad texts. And 2 or 3 weeks ago, and he does the, like, kind of what older people seem to do, which is where you can, like, have a bold subject line on the text message, and
okay.
then it's the text. So it said, Wu-Tang Clan in bold. And then it was like, have you heard of these guys?
That's,
like,
great.
Yeah, I have. Actually, they've been, like, one of the most influential artists of my entire life.
Right.
Like, huge reason why Doomtree was birthed.
Yeah.
Like, POS... was this punk rock kid who would wear a Wu-Tang, the big W, like, ripped tank top.
Sure.
He loved Wu-Tang, even though he was, like, this punk rock kid. And
yeah.
so, like, yeah. I was like, yeah. Yes, I have, Dad. Thanks for checking, though.
That's great that he's discovering it
now.
Awesome. You know? I suppose that's the equivalent of you being like, hey, Dad, have you ever heard of this band Led Zeppelin?
So it's exactly that. And I know that I'll do the same thing to my kids,
right,
you know,
right.
in
yeah, yeah.
30
at
years.
Some point,
so, yeah,
yeah
it's good to see that coming.
So John wants me to, the question would be, do you remember the beats that you've made? I mean, I
like,
put a number on how many beats you've ever made.
Yeah, it's probably 2000-ish.
Okay. So
long time.
To pinpoint any one song might be a little difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I do, like... if you were to play even the early shit, like, you know, the very first throwaway beats, if I heard 3 seconds of it, I could immediately, because, you know, when you're making a beat, you're listening to the same shit. So beats are already kind of loops that are happening over and over again.
Sure.
When you're making that, you hear that shit like hundreds, thousands of times.
Mm-hmm.
And then you finish the beat, and then someone writes a song on top of it. Then you listen to it hundreds of more times, and you mix it, and you master it, you put it out. So, yeah, I basically do.
Okay.
I remember most of them.
Okay.
Do you have, like, a
so I'm gonna
hot
play
seat?
You, yeah, I'm going to
yeah,
play
me something.
All, first of all, we've got...
Yes. Fuck yes. Yes. Johnny question mark.
So that PLC,
PLC.
Hype Hop. Do you
yeah.
have physical copies of
no.
these?
No.
Okay.
Are these mine? Can I have these?
Absolutely.
Oh, my
Look at you
God.
Made the sticker on the front of that
oh
PLC.
Oh, my God.
Right
I know.
Yeah.
I remember
right,
potluck
somehow under potluck, but
yeah, totally. No, potluck rang out for a bit there. Yeah. Hold on, let me see if I remember the song that I did on here. Am I on both of these?
You did. First of all, I'm going to play "The Struggle." This
the
is
struggle.
On. This is on Hype Hop. Is this ringing a bell?
Yeah. Yep. There's the string lead.
Bring in the
yes.
sax.
Yes.
There's
yeah, exactly.
No sax. There's no sax. Get up, punch the clock,
check in, and take a seat. Yeah.
Okay, now the next one is That Guy Plays On. That's the name of the song here.
Yep.
Is this bringing you back?
Yeah, I mean, I was playing around with the... Like, there was a time during this... Yeah, dude, fuck.
Is that a mandolin
like a
or
Spanish
what is it?
Spanish guitar or something, flamenco guitar.
Okay.
And then it's like a trumpet. Then there's like a, it's, there's halftime, there's a weird bass line in there.
It'll pick up here.
Wow.
And then we got Whiskey.
Yeah, and this came at, this was the record after this.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. That's 2013, 14.
Yeah, dude, because I remember when he hit me up, it had been a minute, and I was like, this actually was an, one of the earliest beats I remember making, and it was me and my friend Nick, who wasn't even, he didn't make music, he was like a punk rock guy, and he loved like Irish punk bands.
Yeah.
I think this is a sample of, like, I don't know. Well, we're not going to get in trouble with this record, right?
No.
I feel like we sampled, like, who's that Irish punk band from Boston? Dropkick Murphys. Dropkick, it was like someone like that. You know, there's like a fucking, that's a bagpipe in there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're like, it's like a one sound of a bagpipe, and then I pitched it on the MPC.
Okay.
Wow.
How do you... No, you don't. I don't want your secrets here.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Are you like a crate digger? How do you
find? I was. So yes. So my, how I got into production was very much the traditional, like digging through the crates. An MPC was literally just an empty box that you plugged a record player into, or a tape deck, or a keyboard.
Yep.
And you hit record on just like you would a tape player, and then you would. That's how you would get your sample. So, you know, that one bagpipe sound. Record, stop, assign it to a pad. Now every time you hit the pad, it goes. Then there's a way on the 16 pads to assign it a sound to essentially a keyboard. So now, you know, every button you're hitting is a different note.
Yep.
Early days, that was it, because the sample time on an MPC was like, I think you had 12 seconds total.
Okay.
For a whole song, and that means like at that one sound, maybe that's 2 seconds. Well, now you have 10 seconds. You need to get a, you need to find an open kick drum on a record that just goes, and then you sample that. Okay, you can trim that down. That's half a second. Same with a snare. Same with a hi hat. Mm. And now you have maybe like you can sample one bass note, but in order to cheat the system, you sample one note and then you play it out on the 16 level pads, and it still counts as that 1 second, but you can change the pitch.
Sure.
So there was, that was it. It was like less is more, because you literally couldn't do any more than that.
Yeah.
So that's why that beat, that one you played, Whiskey, play, run it back. Let's do it. Let's do a little. I mean, you're gonna hear, a really too loud hi-hat, which was my, that was trouble for me in the beginning. I thought the hi-hat needed to be really loud. Probably. So that was one sample, and that's just happening over and over again. So, but here it goes.
Okay.
That's one. Anyways, the bass line is just one note that I'm playing out. Kick, snare, hi-hat.
Yeah.
And it's probably like an open hi-hat. Fuck, man.
It brings
nice
you
job.
Back. That's great. That's great.
Nice job.
Thanks, John.
Woo! Yeah, no, it takes me back to like the room that I was renting where I made, I know the setup I had when I made this beat, like vividly. I had a piece of plywood over two file cabinets where I held all the city pages that I had to collect. And then my MPC and a record player and two like speakers I got from Goodwill.
Yeah.
Fuck, man. That was great.
Yeah. That's great.
That was
awesome. You can take
Thank
those.
You. I'm going to jam these in the Chrysler Pacifica.
That Johnny, and I know John doesn't like, I don't know if, how he takes this, but the Johnny question mark project, I did all the album artwork and stuff on there. That was,
dude,
it's just such a great project. It's one of my favorite Minnesota hip hop albums of all time.
Awesome. Oh, that's right. You got Mac on here too.
Yeah, Mac Lethal.
Crazy. So was this still... Was PLC still in existence at this time?
They weren't.
This was like him doing it still.
Doing a solo deal,
yeah. Dude, PLC. Yeah, you guys were like doing your thing.
We were doing it.
I see Fatty McGee on here.
Fatty McGee, I'm on there. I'm on a couple tracks. Closing track.
And
two.
Professor Fresh, absolutely. Yeah. I remember. Dude, this is cool.
He's got ideas on a track on that one, too.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
R.I.P. Idea.
Yeah, man. The legend god. Wow.
So here's one last question for you.
Yep.
Are you still active on Twitter right
now?
No. Okay. You retired from Twitter.
I got off Twitter like right when all the shit hit the fan in 2020, and I've never looked back.
Okay.
I'm still on Instagram. I find that to be a very lovely place.
Yeah, I agree. March 22nd, 2020, you made this post.
Okay.
At this time, your son was 6 years old.
Okay, yep.
And it was, I was awakened this morning by my six-year-old son gently whispering in my ear, "Daddy, I'm going to kill you. Put you in a witch's stew." The cracks are starting to show. Obviously, he was not successful in this.
Right.
So why does, like, your son want to kill
this
you?
This is like a week into COVID, essentially. That's, if
oh,
it's
yeah,
March,
you're right.
So it's like, I was really in that moment. Yeah. You know, it's obviously a lot of shit happened in the city, but in the fun, I call it the fun moment of COVID before George Floyd, when yeah. we were all just like watching Tiger King and the Michael Jordan documentary, yep. like, and drinking too much. Like, it was such, yeah. it was kind of like novelty for sure. like 3 weeks.
Sure.
So I was having a lot of fun on social media. Okay. Like, my kids are—we're all just stuck in this house. We're going sure. batshit crazy. Sorry, what was your question?
Is your son trying to kill you? Obviously, he did yeah. not succeed.
That is definitely my son Luther. Okay. I know it. He's still very into like darkness and death. So he okay. has like a book from the library called, like, you know, what happens when I die and things like that. And
wow.
he's favorite color is black now. Like, yeah, he's a dark, dark child.
Okay.
But. No, I don't think he wants to kill me.
Sure.
Good. For a moment there, I was like, shit.
You
man,
were a little
worried. Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. he's, I think he means it. but no, he's just like, he leans in on that stuff.
Okay.
And he's always like, he will not tell you he loves you. He like is like, whatever, wow. dad. Like, he that's kind of like part of his, he plays that up. You
sure.
know, like, he's very unimpressed. And he's who I go to for fashion advice.
Okay.
So, like, if I'm going to go out.
Is that why you wore the black shirt and the black shorts?
The black
Look
shorts,
at you today.
I know.
Look at you.
Yeah, exactly. I'm yeah. repping hard for him.
Yeah.
No, he used to be super into colors. But yeah, he's the one I go to. Like, I can't trust my wife because I just think she's already checked out at this point. We've been together for like 20 years. So I'm like, she's just going to say whatever looks fine. But my son Luther is going to give it to me straight.
Yep.
And especially if I give him an option, he's going to be like, do not go outside of the house in that.
I love that. That's great.
Yeah, he keeps me on my toes.
All right, we're going to wrap this up.
Okay.
I just want to, during the pandemic, you worked on this project, Nightstone.
Yes.
Right? Penelope, Cameron, Spread
yes.
Love with Longshot. You got the project
yeah.
with Longshot. A couple albums.
I did a bunch of shit.
Yeah.
I leaned into solo work because it was so easy in the pandemic.
Yeah.
I literally just me in my bedroom with like headphones and I could do it. And so I basically made the 3-album trilogy for my kids, which is like the chill meditation beats.
Mm-hmm. Super cool, man.
It's so fun. I mean, they don't give a shit now, but I think eventually they will.
Yeah.
But it was also humbling to be like, I just poured like 4 years of my life into this
yeah.
and no one cares in my
right.
house. And then the Nightstone project was like, came out of this. I really got into, I didn't grow up in electronic music at all. I missed rave culture by like a couple years. I never like experienced house music or anything like
sure.
that. And then I just like discovered house music. It was like, this is so cool. And I did the same thing I did with indie rock and hip hop. Like, I went down the rabbit hole and started to like learn the history and was like, oh, I've never made anything like this.
Mm-hmm.
I've never worked in hip hop is generally pretty slow BPMs considering, you know, you're in the like 60 to 100 maybe.
Right.
House music doesn't even start to like 120.
Right.
And then when you get into the subgenres, like drum and bass is
like
170 or whatever.
You
gotta
exactly. shake your butt.
We're moving.
Yeah.
So it's just fascinating. And it was like, let's just, and my good friend Icetap, who's a producer, was also like, he loved house music, but he'd never made it. So we're again, mm-hmm. same thing as how Doomtree started. We're like, well, should we just like learn together?
Mm-hmm.
And we made all these beats. And we were like, this is fucking fun and cool. And it doesn't really hold up without vocals, so we need to call all our friends.
Yeah.
And then we did. And like Lady Midnight's on there, Sophia
yep.
Aris, a lot of people we've talked about.
Yep.
Mike, MMYYKK, who's amazing. Who the fuck else?
I'm glad you said that. I never understood how to pronounce
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's just Mike. As far as I know, it's just Mike, but
okay.
it's spelled very crazily.
Okay.
He's incredible. Who the fuck else? Chani from Pulisa,
oh,
who
yep.
I used to manage.
Okay.
Yeah, and it just kind of happened. And I think it literally came out like the week it was like COVID and then George Floyd was murdered and then it, you know I think that album came out like 2 days after that and it was like okay we kind of just put it to bed
sure.
But recently I did revisit it and I was like, man, that turned out pretty cool. I'm proud of that
yeah,
one.
It is.
I don't think many
really
people
good.
Heard it, but I'm really proud of it. And honestly, that was the impetus for me to really start me and Icetap. So we're producing the upcoming Lady Midnight album as Nightstone. and it is in that vein. And she's going to do her like amazing sultry R&B vocal stuff over these like really high energy French house beats.
Wow.
So
super cool.
It's like that was, you know, everything happens kind of for a reason. I do kind of play into that cheesiness. Yeah. And so like that Nightstone was when we were like, oh fuck, this feels good. We're going to make a whole record together.
Nice.
So it's cool. We
look
man.
Forward to hearing that.
Yeah, dude. I think next year it should be
all
good.
Right. So as far as like what you want people to follow you,
yeah,
Instagram's the way to go.
Yeah, Twitter, I'm not on there. Instagram at Laserbeak.
Yep.
Simple.
Doomtree.net.
Yeah, Doomtree.net. Mm-hmm. Facebook, I'm on there. I just post the same shit as I post on Instagram. But if you're like an old uncle or something and you only use Facebook, then you'll see the same shit. I'm not that far off. And then, yeah, I've been dropping. I mean, Spotify is almost like its own social media these days.
Okay.
But I've been dropping 2 songs a month since the beginning of the year.
For Lava Bangers 2.
Lava Bangers 2. It's the 10-year anniversary. Yeah. I'm super in my feelings. I'm about to turn 40. It's like, whatever. So 2 songs every first Tuesday of the month for the year, culminated in 20 songs, all just like beats that I worked on during the pandemic.
And who's doing the artwork for those?
That's my friend Andy McAlpine. He lives out in the Netherlands. And we... I don't know how did we meet? He was friends of Astronautilus, and so he had done the artwork for Four Fists, which is Astronautilus and POS's project. And that's how I met him, because again, like all the non-sexy stuff of like, hey, we need someone to lay out the project, and I got to like talk to copycats and how to whatever. Like, I just talked to him as a designer from the label perspective, and we just hit it off. And beautiful thing is in pandemic time, like we became like best friends via text. Like he's out in the Netherlands. He's originally from Australia. I'm over here, and like we both love weird movies, and we're just like, I text with him every fucking day. It's so weird. He's like one of my best friends, and he does all the art for me now. But yeah, so every single cover is like actually 2 pieces of art that he's created that are kind of mashed together.
It's really cool.
Isn't it cool?
Yeah,
I'm so happy to have him, man. He's like truly a collaborator in that project, so... but yeah, check it out. Laserbeak on Spotify. That's like tons. That's where all the new shit's dropping. And I mean, everywhere you listen to music, that's where everything's dropping. But and then I've got a bunch of music with Dwayne Roland, who's a rapper from here.
Yeah.
And then Ernest Third, who's a rapper from Baltimore, who just moved to Las Vegas. But we've got a bunch of singles coming out. So I'm staying busy.
I was in the studio.
I was in the studio with Dessa last week. We got a new Dessa EP coming next year.
All
so.
Right.
Staying busy.
Yeah, good.
Like I said, I get crabby when I'm not, so I have a feeling you might be similar.
Yeah.
Similar to that.
Well, okay. So you got shit cooking.
I got shit cooking,
baby.
This
is great to hear. All right, we're going to wrap this up, because you got Luther's waiting for you at home. He's where the fuck is my dad?
Switchblade on him, yeah, exactly.
Has he cussed yet?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
and
he
I mean, that's
is.
That's in no, yeah, that's all me. That's my problem. So we've started to finally, because all of a sudden, you know, all the kids would be going around like, ah, fucking shit, dad, or whatever. And I'm like, oh, well, I know where they got that one. So now we're really leaning into frick. But now we're just saying frick all the time. I'll be like, get out of the frickin' car, man. Go to school. Yeah. Like,
it's acceptable.
It's fine.
Yeah, frick
works.
All right.
Yes.
At ThankYouRob is where you find me.
Yes.
ThankYouRob.com.
Yes.
I'm out there.
You're out there. You're on Twitter still? You're everywhere.
I'm on Twitter, but I'm Instagram.
Rob. Yeah.
I'm
Instagram's
Instagram.
Where it's at.
Yeah.
At Thank You Rob.
Yeah. So follow me there.
Yeah.
Check out the podcast on whatever the platform, Spotify, Apple Podcast.
Yes.
Review the podcast.
Yes.
If you really felt this one sucked, first of all, there's something wrong with you.
That's fine.
I feel very strongly that this was a great episode.
I feel good about it.
I'm feeling good.
Yeah.
Maybe the word great is, I don't want to be full of myself.
Yeah, exactly.
It was good. It was adequate.
Super solid.
Adequate.
I feel like it's worth at least 4 stars.
Yeah, I'd go for that.
Yeah. Yes, exactly right. I didn't learn until I had a podcast that it does really help if people leave a review and rate it and all that shit and
absolutely.
Like it. It's the only way.
Check out the Tuesdays with the Laserbeak podcast.
Yeah,
those were
fun
episodes,
man. Go into the deep archives while it's still up there.
Well, thank you for coming by. I really appreciate it, man.
A pleasure. It's great to see you.
I'm sorry that John's not here to...
He'll be missed.
Yeah. Well, you're leaving with some of his material.
I feel like I hung out with him because I got to listen to these songs now. So it's a good trip down memory lane.
Well, thanks for coming through, man.
Yeah,
we're going to go fishing this weekend.
I love it.
We're friends now.
Hell yeah.
It's just solidified when we catch a 20-pound bass.
That'll be the cover of the podcast.
Do you even fish?
No.
Neither do I.
Yeah. We'll get there.
Yeah.
We got time.
Bye.
Gonna place that bet if you wanna come testing the mama's nest with a bullet vest and a curious chest. Got the M on a brain, but I have the best. Hey, I'm pumped up, call me dough cooking. Cookie Saturday, soul tookin'. Batches in a row looking. Magic is all hell we living. Never ever will we give in to a wack. We fuck with laser beak in these black streets. Get it? No fear, and we get